Swithlin's prow was 15 meters from the trees and creepers which were strangling the bank. Rosemary could hear the sound of their own bedeviling geyser reducing. She fought the wheel to keep the boat lined up straight on the bank. The bottom was shelving up rapidly, the forward sweep mass detector emitting a frantic howl in warning. 5 meters deep, 4, 3. They struck mud 8 meters from the long, flower-heavy vines trailing in the water. The big boat's awesome inertia propelled them along, slithering and sliding through the thick black alluvial muck. Bubbles of foul-smelling sulphurous gas churned around the sides of the hull. The geyser had died completely. There was a moment of pure, dreamy silence before they hit the bank. Rosemary saw a huge caltuk tree dead ahead. One of its thick boughs was the same height as the bridge. She ducked. The impact threw Yuri Wilkin back onto his belly just as he was starting to get up again. His nose slammed painfully against the deck. He tasted warm blood. The boat was making hideous crunching sounds as it ploughed into the frill of vegetation along the bank. Long vine strands lashed through the air with the brutality of bullwhips. He tried to bury himself into the hard decking as they slashed centimeters above his head. Swithlin's blunt prow rammed the low bank, jolting upwards to ride a good 10 meters across the dark red sandy earth. The paddle boat finally came to a bruising halt with its forward deck badly mangled and the caltuk tree embedded in the front of the superstructure. Screams and wailing gave way to moans and shrill cries for help. Yuri risked glancing about, seeing the way in which the jungle had shrink-wrapped itself around the forward half of the boat. The superstructure looked dangerously unstable. It was leaning over sharply, with tons of vegetation pressing against the front and side. His limbs were shaking uncontrollably. He wanted to be home in Durringham, taking Randolph for walks or playing football with his mates. He didn't belong here in the jungle. "Are you all right, son?" Mansing asked. Sheriff Mansing was the one who had signed him on for the expedition. He was a lot more approachable than some of the sheriffs, keeping a fatherly eye out for him. "I think so." He dabbed at his nose experimentally, sniffing hard. There was blood on his hand. "You'll live," Mansing said. "Where's Randolph?"
"I don't know."
He climbed shakily to his feet. They were standing at the front corner of the superstructure. People were lying all around, slowly picking themselves up, asking for help, wearing a numb, frightened expression. Two bodies had been trapped between the caltuk trunk and the superstructure. One was a small girl aged about 8. Yuri could only tell because she was wearing a dress. He turned away, gagging. "Call for him," Mansing said. "We're going to need all the help we can get pretty soon."
"Sir?"
"You think this was an accident?" Yuri hadn't thought it was anything. The notion sent a tremble down his spine. He put his lips together and managed a feeble whistle. 12 years I've been sailing up and down this river," Mansing said grimly. "I've never seen anything like that geyser before. What the hell can shoot water about like that? And there was more than one of them." Randolph came lumbering up over the gunwale, his sleek black hide covered in smelly mud. The sace had lost all of his usual aggressive arrogance, slinking straight over to Yuri and pressing against his master's legs.
"Water bad," he growled.
"He's not far wrong there," Mansing agreed cheerlessly. It took a quarter of an hour to establish any kind of order around the wrecked paddle boat. The sheriffs organized parties to tend to the wounded and set up a makeshift camp. By general consensus, they moved 50 meters inland, away from the river and whatever prowled below the water. Several survivors from the Nassir managed to swim to the stern of the Swithlin, which was half-submerged. The boat formed a useful bridge over the stinking quagmire which lined the bank. The Heisel had managed to reach the Zamjan's far bank. It had been spared the destructive geyser, but its hull had taken a dreadful pounding. Radio contact was established, and both groups decided to stay where they were, rather than attempt to cross the river and join forces. Sheriff Mansing located an unbroken communication block amongst the remnants of the posse's gear, and patched a call through the LDC's single geostationary satellite to Candace Elford. The shocked chief sheriff agreed to divert the two BK-133s to the Swithland and fly the seriously injured back to Durringham straight away.